So today I'm sitting in the halls of power with a pillar of the Fourth Estate, Joel McManus. Thanks for being on the Green Desk.
Thanks, bro. Thanks for having me.
So first, I really want to talk what is going on in Wellington. Primarily, I want to talk about infrastructure. But first, I want an honest vibe check. Because reading the news, you know, the capital is a hellscape with empty shops and barren streets. But at the same time, the coalition government and the Wellington City Council have plans, or are actually proceeding with plans, to build some of the most consequential infrastructure developments in at least a generation. If we were calling this a counselling session, you know, can we be honest, as a friend of Wellington, how's she doing, honestly?
I mean, Wellington's in some dire straits, but it's definitely not at the crisis hellscape level that a lot of people make it out to be. You know, there's no denying that there is a recession happening right now, and that's affecting every city, but it's affecting Wellington more than most because of the public sector layoffs, because that is the largest employer in town, and that has affected thousands of jobs. So a lot of people have gone overseas or have moved to other cities or are just not in work at the moment. But I really do think this is a temporary blip. Like, Wellington's had a tough run. Obviously, this COVID, the Kaikoura earthquake in 2016, all of the stuff has just kind of taken a toll. But I don't think that speaks to a fundamental weakness with Wellington. I think if you look at sort of, you know, the basic stats, Wellington has the highest GDP per capita in the country. We have the highest educated workforce. It is a growing city, although most of the growth is happening in the hut, because for a long time, Wellington City itself has been too restrictive on new housing, but that changed this year. So basically the way I see it is kind of like Wellington's going through a certain adolescence. It has some awkwardness to work out. It has to kind of figure itself out, get over some issues. But the promise is there, and there is a big future there, and I think the fundamentals show that.
As the Wellington editor of the spin-off, you look in depth at a lot of things Wellington that maybe other people don't look at. One of the big ones is cycleways. And so in the topics of infrastructure I want to talk about, I've just read an article where you've said fewer cities have attempted to build a connected cycle network this quickly. Could you explain how the network in Wellington has grown? How has it been done so fast? Why is this important?
I remember sitting in a council meeting in, I think, 2019, when Andy Foster was mayor, and I was in my first job for Stuff as a journalist, and they were discussing the long-term plan, which is the 10-year budget. And Tamitha Paul, who was at the time, I think, a 23-year-old councillor who had just been VUSA president and then got on the council, kind of highlighted the, you know, they're going through every single line of the budget and being like, how much has been on this, da 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 da. And Andy Foster kept trying to cut everything. And then we came to the cycleway budget, and there were four options on the table, you know, like do minimal, kind of do a bit. And they'd kind of done the second lowest option, which was going to cost like $70 million. And then Tam had just asked the council staff to be like, put the 100% option just on the sheet of paper. And then in the meeting, she forced a vote on the 100% option, which was 220 odd million. And it was basically build every cycleway that the council had ever like dreamed of, you know, on this like brainstorming map that was this entire complete connected network across the city. And she just kind of said, well, let's do that, and forced a vote. And you could definitely see around the table that even a lot of the Labour and Green councillors might not have pushed for that, but once there was a vote on it, they couldn't not support it. And then it kind of passed, you know, by a slim margin. And then everyone sort of moved on. And I remember sitting there and being like, guys, what's just happened? The city had just committed to something that no other city in New Zealand, very few cities in the world, had ever committed to. They just said, yeah, we're going to go all in and build a cycling network that is complete as a road network or a train network. And then I talked to a bunch of council staff once that happened, because they suddenly went, oh, well, this was just something we dreamed about, and now we actually have to do it. And so what they ended up adopting was a tactic called tactical urbanism, which is basically you just put things on the road really quickly and really cheaply. You get some plastic barriers, some planter boxes, and just slap a cycleway down, because you can do that a lot cheaper and a lot quicker, and then you have something on the road, and then you can get feedback from people. Oh, is this bit a bit awkward? Would it be better if we moved that bit out or changed the turning lane here? And that's a lot more useful than, you know, spending a year consulting before you even start the project and then putting down some expensive curbs. It's, you know, it's been controversial at times because some of the design is poor, but that's kind of the point, is you do it quick and you can change it. And so, you know, it hasn't necessarily felt that fast because we're still having these fights every day, but within 5 years, they've got most of the network down and they're really finishing just some of the final bits of connection. And pretty soon, there will be some form of cycleway of varying quality from basically every significant suburb in the city right to the middle of town, you know, including all the way out to the hut. And with the rise of e-bikes, this is kind of amazing. Like the amount of places you can bike to within 20 minutes, a normal commute, safely, people are confident riding with their children. That is like an enormous game changer for the way a city just exists.
Yeah, and so speaking personally as a cyclist, a lot of cities around New Zealand have, to put it in like a body context, there's a lot of arteries, but if you don't have veins, it's kind of pointless. Like in Auckland, I can go on these beautiful cycles, but then to get to like any suburb, you have to go on these like massive roads with these trucks and whatnot. So having the veins is like game changer. But one of the things you said in your article was it's actually the city centre and the Golden Mile development that is the kind of missing piece. And there's a whole, if you can explain briefly and not too convolutedly, which is probably impossible, but what's going on with the Golden Mile? Is the Wellington City Council at loggerheads with the national or coalition government? What's the happening?
Well, there's a couple different things here. The Centre City Cycleways is kind of its own program, and that's a missing piece for the cycleway network. And then there's the Golden Mile, which I see really as more of a streetscape placemaking program and like an economic development program. I mean, the Golden Mile, which is not a mile, it's actually like a mile and a half, runs from Courtney Place all the way down Manor Street, Willow Street, Lambton Quay. And that is just the middle of Wellington town. And actually, and each of those streets serve a lot of different purposes. There are office space, retail space, and then Courtney Place obviously is sort of the party area. Now, the proposal, which is incredibly reasonable in my mind, very similar to the Auckland's, you know, Queen Street redevelopment, is basically to make these streets a lot more people friendly. So that means expanding out the footpaths, putting a bunch of new planting and sort of seating areas, and making a priority bus lane running the entire way. So that basically means cutting off private traffic from the street. But if you live in Wellington, not that many people drive down Lambton Quay anyway. It's not particularly convenient. So there's actually enormous gains we can get in terms of streetscape just by removing a handful of car parks on the street that I don't think are particularly economically important for the city. Now, these kind of projects always just turn into just a massive fight. And it really is because some people, particularly people who have grown up in New Zealand from the 1960s onwards, when our country really just embraced suburban living and car-dependent lifestyles, you know, to a lot of people that change is quite shocking. And when you say, oh, you don't need a car park outside your business, they say, what? Of course I do. What are you talking about? How will anyone get there? And so there's a real, like, it takes a lot to change minds and change perceptions on that front. And for some people, it is a bit of a logical leap that they can't quite make. Now, a lot of these retailers are, I think, legitimately concerned about the disruption from the construction itself. And I think that's entirely reasonable. And I think there's certain things council and government can do about that. But in terms of whether the street, you know, whether making the street nicer will make more people want to be on the street, I think that seems kind of obvious to me. Like, it's not particularly nice to walk down Courtney Place right now. You know what? You make the footpaths a lot wider. You make the paving grippier. You make some nice plants and art. Yeah, it'll be a better place to be.
So on my walk to Parliament today, walking down the Golden Mile, obviously you just see pipes or water just coming out of the ground. It's something you hear in the news, but it's something kind of surprising when you actually get to Wellington. You're like, oh yeah, the ground is seeping water from like the pipe infrastructure. Can you give us a kind of quick blow-by-blow of what's happening? And I know this is it's probably the most boring topic, but it's actually probably the most expensive and important. So what's the kind of state of play at the moment and what's happening in the future?
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. You see drinking water pipes just kind of randomly leaking onto the road constantly. You have certain issues with stormwater pipes, obviously, when it rains heavily. We tend to get wastewater in the harbour a lot, although, you know, a lot of cities get that. It's one of those, like, immense problems because the pipe network has been underfunded for decades. Like, there was a big investigation into it that basically just looked back and was just like, oh, yeah, year after year after year, the council just wasn't putting enough money into it. And it's kind of because, like, voters wanted lower rates and no one notices the pipes because they're underground, so eh. But it got to this point where Wellington Water, who obviously oversees the water, didn't even know the state of their network. They didn't even know where their pipes were. We were getting situations where pipes were breaking and they were going, oh, we didn't know we had a pipe there. Like, at one point, I was sitting in a meeting where, you know, they were being questioned saying, okay, well, how much of the network have you assessed? And they said 10%, we think, but they didn't know for sure because they didn't exactly know how big the network was. Because some of these pipes were put in the grounds in the 1800s or whatever. Like, we don't have particularly good records of them. So it's just this enormous thing to fix. Right now, one of the things that Wellington hasn't done that seems like the obvious solution is to have what Auckland has, and is to have separate water rates. Right now water is just part of the council budget and it kind of just gets wrapped into all the larger rates, and so it tends to get cut when people don't want to fund it, or there's always a trade-off about water or something else. Right now there's a reform underway with Wellington Water to kind of reinvent the organisation, probably give it more power, create some sort of region-wide entity, separate from the previous government's three water reforms, but along the same lines. And at this point, that's probably the solution has to be somewhere in that ballpark. I don't really see that you could continue as status quo as it just being council run, funded by rates. There needs to be some kind of new solution, but I couldn't tell you exactly what.
I mean, how do you fix like 100 years of broken pipes that no one knows about? It's bonkers. But I mean, the fact that we live in Auckland and we pay for the amount of water we use, and Wellington is one of these last holdouts of, you can just use it up and no meters at all. So it seems like a sensible thing to do. And then finally, what I want to talk about is the tunnels that are being proposed. The first one that comes to mind is the one under Victoria, so one for cars, public transport maybe. And then there's the other mind-boggling tunnel from, I think, Simeon Brown. It's like extending the motorway to Kilburnie or something like that, which is going to cost $100 billion, maybe $5 trillion. Like, it just seems insane. What's happening with these two tunnels? Is either of them likely to happen?
There will be a tunnel. I think there is a general consensus across Parliament that there needs to be a second Mount Victoria tunnel, technically a third, because if you count the bus tunnel. There has been a lot of back and forth under the previous government. The second one was going to be for Well, no, the second one was going to be for cars, and they were going to turn the current one into, like, public transport and just walking and cycling priority. The current government just wants them both to be for cars. And then kind of there still hasn't been an answer settled on. And then one that Simeon Brown has thrown out just recently is the Long Tunnel, which is the same project. He's just saying, well, if we're going to go under Mount Victoria, why don't we go under the whole city, connect the Terrace Tunnel directly to Kilburnie, which is a... Yeah, it would be the longest tunnel ever built, longest road tunnel ever built in New Zealand. No one, I think, has even dared to put a number on it. It was considered in the early days of Let's Get Wellington Moving and basically laughed out. They were like, well, that's just not possible. The benefits are, there are some benefits. You know, it would obviously speed up trips between the airport and the outer regions. For commuters from the south coast getting into the centre city, it would mean the highway's not directly crossing you, so it's probably a little bit easier to run some bus lanes in there. But certainly the benefits don't appear to justify the costs from what we've seen. So, like, at least in terms of city development and kind of getting commuters into town, I mean, I would certainly say if you're going to invest billions of dollars, your priority should be connections to and from the city, whereas this just bypasses the city entirely. So, I mean, I really don't know what happened. I think the minister made a mistake by buying into this. I think this is an idea that has been tossed around. There's a few transport consultants. I've talked to some actually quite smart people who are intrigued by the idea. So it's not totally crackpot, but he clearly got very excited by the idea. Commissioned a business case at, you know, over $1 million just to do some reports, and now they're kind of continuing to look into it. I suspect it's kind of just going to end up being a bit of egg on his face, because I can't see any situation where this comes back saying, yes, it's possible, and certainly not any situation where a future government, you know, a future Labour government would continue the project unless it's already like halfway done. You know, these things have been done in other cities. Boston did, they called it the Big Dig. They did a somewhat similar, like, tunneled under the city, and it, you know, if you, it there's some nice parks there now, like, it had some benefits, and sort of, you know, if you look at it in isolation, yeah, you know, it would mean sort of the back of Te Aro could have a lot more apartments, that sort of thing, but it's just kind of, is it even possible?
And New Zealand has a terrible record of building tunnels under the ground. Like the Central Rail Link in Auckland is like 10 times over budget or something like that. And then what's happened is, because there's no you know, pipeline of work, all these like specialists have just left the country, so we kind of have to start from the beginning again. But kind of wrapping up, what, how do you feel about Wellington going forward, maybe next year into the next kind of 3 years, because it feels like we're finally getting out of this blip, as you said, you know, interest rates coming down, maybe the city kind of comes back to life, or is it going to kind of limp along a bit? What's your predictions, any hardcore predictions you've got?
Earlier this year, Wellington passed a new district plan, which I spent 2 months covering just that one story, because I genuinely think it's like the most significant thing the city, the most significant decision the city has made in our lifetime, and probably will for the next couple of decades. You know, it was a complete change to housing rules that, you know, is going to enable apartments and townhouses in places right where right now it's essentially illegal to build them. Well, not right now anymore, but that is a huge opportunity, because the one thing that will really turn things around for Wellington is more people living in the city. Higher total population, but specifically more people living in town, because that's what will give vibrancy to those streets, more customers for those businesses, and, you know, really create economic impact. So, I mean, that's the big thing. Just get more houses built, and it's, you know, you change the law and that's one thing, then you've got to get the developers on board and make it viable for them. But we're starting to see progress there. So, yeah, I don't know how long that will be until we can kind of say significantly there are much more houses than there have been before. But that's like one thing I'm genuinely optimistic about. And sort of the transport network changes with the bike network and the new bus lanes, they support that because people living in apartments are less likely to own cars. They're going to need alternative forms of transport. That's the kind of stuff that will make the city really leap to that next level. And then at a business level, in terms of basically the economy needs to diversify away from everyone just being public servants. So, you know, you're talking software startups in the city and scientific innovation out in the hut. You know, there's some really cool stuff happening with climate tech, alternative energy sources. Kind of, there's a lot of kind of those small to mid-level startups doing super innovative stuff, and kind of everyone's just watching them going, one of these is going to take off. You know, you kind of spread your bets around and you're like, you know, there's people doing nuclear fission. There's people, you know, having, you know, alternative ways to make zinc, like all sorts of like crazy stuff. And if one of them becomes a billion-dollar unicorn, then that could change the direction of the city, you know, long term. So that's kind of stuff. You know, maybe both of those things are a little more than 3 years, but that's the kind of pathway forward that I see and the reason that I have optimism for Wellington.